Good morning, and welcome to Simply Science. It's Sunday, April 7th. On today's show, scientists confirm record highs for three most important heat-trapping gases, and Science Club preps for eclipse event at Hazleton Area High School. Plus, Science Saturdays hosts Eclipse Show ahead of big event. This coverage and more, up next. I'm David, and you're listening to Simply Science. We start off with a focus on critical materials, substances identified by the U.S. government as essential to energy technologies, economic and national security, and the manufacture of key products. The Department of Energy has identified 18 such materials that are vital for the future of the energy sector. Here to delve deeper into this topic is Abby, a correspondent for Simply Science. Can you tell us more about these critical materials and why they are so important?
Certainly, David. Critical materials have unique properties that make them indispensable for advanced technologies. Some are used to create compact, powerful magnets. Others speed up chemical reactions, and a few efficiently convert electricity into light. All of these materials are natural elements, not created in laboratories. They come from stars and supernovas, and only minuscule amounts are created through radioactive decay and other means. This means the supply on Earth is all we have for now.
Could you give us an example of one of these critical materials?
Sure, gallium is a good example. It's used in a range of electronic devices, including LED light bulbs, the communication chips in smartphones, and high-efficiency power supplies. It's not mined directly, but is produced as a byproduct of aluminum manufacturing. China accounts for over 90% of the world's gallium production, and in 2023 announced severe restrictions on the export of this critical element.
What about the other critical materials?
The list of critical materials includes all but one of the 17 rare earth metals. These silvery metals are chemically similar and are called rare, in part because they tend to occur together and are hard to separate from other materials. Research projects supported by the DOE Office of Science could reduce the cost of recycling these critical materials.
What is the Department of Energy doing in terms of research on critical materials?
The DOE is heavily involved with critical materials due to their importance to clean energy technology. Under the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law and Inflation Reduction Act, DOE oversees several key programs to address critical material concerns. They're leading work on the Rare Earth Elements Demonstration Facility and enabling the production and processing of rare earth elements from mining and industrial wastes and other unconventional sources. They've also created the Critical Materials Innovation Hub, which conducts applied research to advance technologies that can unlock new sources of critical materials, substitutes for these materials, and ways to make better use of existing material through reuse and recycling.
Thanks for that enlightening report, Abby. Now, shifting gears to another pressing issue, U.S. scientists have confirmed that the levels of the three most significant heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere reached new record highs last year, emphasizing the growing challenge posed by the climate crisis. The global concentration of carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide all saw increases. Here to delve deeper into this topic is our correspondent, James. Can you tell us more about these increases and their implications?
Certainly, David. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, reported that the average global concentration of carbon dioxide rose to 419 parts per million in 2023. Methane, another potent greenhouse gas, rose to an average of 922 parts per billion, while nitrous oxide levels climbed slightly to 336 parts per billion. These increases may not match the record jumps seen in recent years, but they still represent a significant change in the atmosphere's composition compared to just a decade ago.
And what are the main sources of these greenhouse gases?
The burning of fossil fuels, animal agriculture, and deforestation are the primary contributors to the world's CO2 levels, which are now more than 50% higher than pre-industrial times. Methane, which comes from sources like oil and gas drilling and livestock, has surged even more dramatically, with concentrations now 160% larger than in pre-industrial times. Nitrous oxide has risen due to the widespread use of nitrogen fertilizer and the intensification of agriculture.
What are the potential impacts of these rising greenhouse gas levels?
The increasing presence of greenhouse gases is driving a rise in global temperature. Last year was the hottest ever measured worldwide. This rise in temperature is linked to associated impacts such as floods, droughts, heat waves, and wildfires. Furthermore, carbon dioxide levels today are now comparable to what they were around 4 million years ago, a time when sea levels were around 75 feet higher than today. The average temperature was far hotter, and large forests occupied areas of the now frozen Arctic.
That's quite alarming. What needs to be done to address this issue?
As Vanda Grubesich, director of NOAA's Global Monitoring Laboratory, stated, there's a lot of work to be done to make meaningful progress in reducing the amount of greenhouse gases accumulating in the atmosphere. Scientists are urging governments to rapidly slash emissions to net zero and then start removing carbon from the atmosphere to mitigate future temperature increases. The timescale of the climate crisis is enormous, given the lag between CO2 levels and their impact, as well as the hundreds of years that the emissions remain in the atmosphere.
Thanks for that report, James, on the escalating challenge posed by the climate crisis. In a lighter note, let's turn our attention to the Science Club students at Hazleton Area High School who are preparing for an eclipse event on the school's tennis courts. This event is part of a broader initiative to engage students in scientific activities. Here to discuss this further is Celeste, a correspondent for Simply Science. Can you tell us more about this event and the students' preparations?
Certainly, David. The Science Club students have been rehearsing for this event, which is set to take place on Monday afternoon. The students will be demonstrating various scientific phenomena related to eclipses, and they've been practicing to ensure everything goes smoothly.
That sounds like a great learning opportunity. Can you tell us more about the Science Club and its activities?
The Science Club at Hazleton Area High School is an active group of students who are passionate about science. They regularly engage in activities that allow them to explore different scientific concepts. This eclipse event is just one of the many initiatives they undertake to promote science education.
And how are they planning to demonstrate the eclipse?
The students will be using a variety of tools and techniques to demonstrate the eclipse. They'll be explaining the science behind eclipses and will be using visual aids to help attendees understand the phenomenon better. The aim is to make the event as interactive and educational as possible.
That's quite impressive. How has the response been from the school community and the public?
The response has been very positive. The school community is excited about the event, and there's been a lot of interest from the public as well. Events like these not only provide a great learning opportunity, but also help to foster a love for science among students and the community.
It's always inspiring to see students taking an active role in promoting science education. Thanks for sharing that story, Celeste. Speaking of science education, let's move over to Dayton, Ohio, where children have been given a unique opportunity to learn about the fascinating science behind eclipses. This was made possible through an educational event called Science Saturdays, hosted by the Engineers Club of Dayton. Michael, our correspondent for Simply Science, is here to tell us more about this event. What can you tell us about Science Saturdays, Michael?
Science Saturdays is an initiative by the Engineers Club of Dayton, where they host about four such events a year, each with a specific theme. This weekend, they hosted Looking Into the Sun, focusing on the upcoming total solar eclipse. The audience, primarily children, got to learn about what causes an eclipse and the science behind this celestial phenomenon.
Sounds like a great way to get kids interested in science. Can you tell us more about the history of Science Saturdays?
Absolutely. Science Saturdays has a rich history. According to P.R. Frank, one of the hosts, the science show has been going on since the time of the Wright brothers, on the very stage of the Engineers Club of Dayton. They've been hosting these shows for 7 years, but the tradition of Science Saturdays has been around for much longer.
And who is the target audience for these shows?
The shows are primarily designed for upper elementary school students, but all ages are welcome. In fact, the show on April 6th saw attendees ranging from as young as 3 years old to high school students. Each show typically sees around 200 people in the audience.
And where are these shows held?
The shows are hosted at the Engineers Club building in downtown Dayton, located at 110 E Monument Avenue. They run from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. throughout the year and are free to the public.
Thanks for sharing that wonderful initiative to get children interested in science, Michael. And with that, we wrap up our stories for today. Thanks for listening to Simply Science. We'll see you back here tomorrow.